This message entitled Worship in the Local Church, number 2. Team Players by Stuart Townend, Peter Brooks and Kate Simmons was recorded at the New Frontiers Together in a Mission Conference 2007 in Brighton.
Okay, we'll wake you up, hopefully, as the morning progresses. Why don't we pray and then we'll get started. So don't start the tape yet. Thank you very much for yesterday. I found it quite fun towards the end when we were discussing stuff. It's quite challenging, wasn't it? And I think we're all working through that stuff together. So I was really pleased about that. Thank you for your participation. A couple of practical things I want to say. In a few moments, we've got Pete back again this morning, and also Kate Simmons, who's been leading worship main stage. The reason I've brought both of them together is because Pete and Kate have worked together with Kate leading the team and being worship leader at CCK in Brighton when Pete was there. And then when Pete moved over to Australia, she has also moved over to Australia. So they have this very interesting, unique perspective of having gone from a big, established church with lots and lots of musicians and all sorts of, you know, great resources to go into a much smaller situation. So I think you guys are in quite a unique kind of position. So you should bring something. Yes, that's right. You should bring something really special. That's what we expect. Anyway. So I think that'll be really interesting. A couple of things I wanted to say, sorry, before we begin, and I just lay out the kind of broad things. One is somebody asked me yesterday about resources, what's available. We started talking about songs, and one of the questions that came up afterwards was, well, where do we find these songs? And I think that's a really interesting question, and it's something I'm working on right now to try and draw resources together. So tomorrow, probably what I'm going to do is try and just gather together a number of resources that we can all be aware of, and we might be able to share some places that we found. There's one that I want to mention now, and I did want to get, I ordered some leaflets, but they haven't come yet, but I'll give them out to you tomorrow. But I'll just quickly mention this website. I'm biased in this because I've got a close association with Kingsway, but there's a great website that's just come up in order to be able to get individual songs. I'll talk more about it tomorrow, but just for now, just make a note of www.kingswaysongs.com, because it's a great resource not only for getting hold of individual sheet music, but actually you can use it as a kind of a worship leader help, because you can look up songs by themes and different things. I'll talk more about it tomorrow, but I'll just make a note of that. I've noticed as well, if you brought your laptop, I don't know, can you access the Brighton Centre thing? Oh, you have to pay. Okay, forget that. Okay. Anyway, that's the first thing. Second thing I just wanted to talk about, yes, I'm just going to share broadly just a few ideas about teamwork. But first of all, when I was thinking about this whole subject of teamwork and us working together, the whole question of communication, I'm sure, will rear its head as we talk about this. And I just wanted to do something that's just kind of, just to cheer us up a bit, you know, first thing in the morning, we need a bit of a laugh, don't we? I looked at this thing that was to do with communication and poor communication. And I found on the internet a number of snippets of basically things that have turned up either in church bulletins or on church newsletters, where people clearly have not communicated very well. What they meant to say is not how it's come out. And I'm just going to share these with you this morning. Okay, so this is poor communication skills. Okay, so every one of these is a genuine thing from a church bulletin or a thing from, you know, church newsletter. And I just want to share these with you. Okay, communication. Okay, this is one of them that turned up. Quite like this. A new loudspeaker system has been installed in the church. It was given by one of our members in honor of his wife. Next Sunday, Mrs. Vinson will be soloist for the morning service. The pastor will then speak on "It's a Terrible Experience." The sermon this morning, Jesus Walks on the Water. The sermon tonight, Searching for Jesus. This being Easter Sunday, we will ask Mrs. Lewis to come forward and lay an egg on the altar. Yeah, that one has been around. Okay, this one suits my sort of sense of humour. This one coming up. Okay, you might not find it funny at all, but I laughed for a little while when I read this. Bertha Belch, a missionary from Africa, will be speaking tonight at Calvary Memorial Church in Racine. Come tonight and hear Bertha Belch all the way. Okay, the Reverend Adam spoke briefly, much to the delight of his audience. This one is really, really cruel. Weight Watchers will meet at 7 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church. Please use large double door side entrance. Okay, this is another one that has been around a little bit, but the ladies of the church have cast off clothing of every kind, and they may be seen in the church basement on Friday. Okay, finally. 22 members were present at the church meeting held at the home of Mrs. Marcia Crutchfield last evening. Mrs. Crutchfield and Mrs. Ranking sang a duet, "The Lord Knows Why." Okay, poor communication. Okay, let me just talk briefly about teamwork, because I did some work on this some time ago before Kate comes and speaks more specifically. I looked up the definition of teamwork in the dictionary, and it has a number of things that it says about teamwork. It first of all mentions a team. It starts by saying a set of animals harnessed together, a string of flying ducks or geese, which I didn't find particularly helpful, although the animals reference was kind of interesting as I thought about worship teams. Secondly, but then it goes to a really, really interesting couple of sentences. Have a think about this, because I actually find this is very, very helpful in thinking about teamwork. Teamwork, work done by organized division of labor. Cooperation, pulling together, and I like this, regard to success of the whole rather than personal exploits. Okay, just make a note of that last phrase. Regard to success of the whole rather than personal exploits. Let me just draw a couple of things from this. First of all, it mentions cooperation. We really as teams need to cooperate together. People who don't work together will not make an effective team. And I want to apply this very practically. Part of working together involves listening to each other. It's a very practical thing. If there's one thing that I would say that I hear from hearing worship teams playing together, is quite often they're not listening to what each other are playing. There's too much stuff going on. People are too concerned with what they are playing, and they're not listening to what someone else plays. And throughout this week, I want to show as a shining example the Fat Fish Band and the way they play. Because quite often, quite a lot of what they play is very simple. But because they're listening to one another, it all fits in. It all fits together. Quite often, people do say, why does our sound not sound like the guys on stage? And of course, they are very accomplished musicians. But actually, what they're playing is not particularly complicated. It's just that it fits together. And quite often, we create a muddy sound in our teams, when we're playing together, because actually too many people are playing too many notes. Okay? So we need to cooperate in the sense of listening to one another. The question I want you to ask practically when you're actually arranging a song is not, what shall I play here, so much as, does the sound need me here? Okay, you need to kind of have that approach in terms of your thinking, in terms of how the sound fits together. Can I bring something? Does it need something here? And if not, then you may not need to play, or you may need to play very simply. So just mention that for you to think about. Secondly, we must pull together. One of the things I've noticed with a lot of teams is that when we're always pulling in different directions, like musical directions, then we tend to get nowhere. And I've been in teams and I've talked with teams who they've got different preferences. Some people like it loud, some people like it soft, some people like vineyard style, some people like soul survivor style, and pulling in different directions. We need to pull in the same direction. Just think about that for your worship team. Are you pulling in the same direction, or do you feel that we're, as a team, you're pulling in different directions? Okay? Finally, let me just say, there is an element of sacrifice, okay, of individual exploits of what we can do for the sake of the overall sound. Yes? So, for example, Bert, who plays keyboards at in the Fatfish Band, is a brilliant player. He's a fantastic player, but you don't hear him all the time showing how good he is. He holds it down. He holds it very steady. There's just little places where he features. That involves an element of sacrifice, of going, no, I'm part of a team now. Yes? It's different if he was playing on his own. If he was playing on his own, he would need to fulfill all the different things that need to happen. Yes? He would need to hold it down himself. But because he's part of a team, he has to immediately adapt what he does according to the rest of the team. So those are just kind of like, if you like, broad brushstrokes in terms of teamwork on a very practical musical level. I'm going to ask Kate to come and speak. She's got some great things to say about the whole subject of teamwork and drawing on a lot of experience. So why don't we welcome Kate?
Oh, I'm quite a bit shorter than Stuart. Great. Can I just ask you, are you mostly, who's the worship leader here? And a member of a worship team? And who's church, any church leaders here this morning? A few. Cool. Excellent. Just helps to know. Great. So, thank you for coming. It's lovely to be here. And as Stuart has said, you know, being a part of churches with my husband Miles and I have known Peter and Susan Brooks for a long time. And we've also known Stuart a long time and been a team with Stuart, actually shared many platforms leading worship with Stuart, which has been brilliant over the years. And one thing you can say about Peter Brooks, actually, is that he is a team guy, okay? And he thrives on being part of a team and actually loves that. And in fact, I'd say he hates not being part of a team. Okay, so we were kind of worried for him when he went to Sydney from a team of 8 elders to like being in an office on his own. You know, we were really worried for him and mainly worried about the church phone bill, okay? Because he can't cope without communicating with people all the time. But one other thing to say about Pete is that he's great at releasing people in ministry, and that's always been the case with me and with Terry as well when I was in Brighton, always releasing me as a worship leader and also as a woman serving the church. So I've been really encouraged and helped by that. And my husband Mars and I, we are team people as well. That's something that we really value. So that's why it didn't seem to be too difficult for us to go to the other side of the world and move to Sydney, because we knew that we were going to a team guy, okay? That was something that was very, very important to us. And I just want to talk a little bit about why is team so important. And as we begin in earnest, you know, doing stuff with the worship team in Sydney, you know, this is going to be one of the main things that we will be talking about and teaching on, the importance of team, the importance of unity, because that's something that God has been underlying in our hearts in recent years. And I know you're very familiar with the verse, Psalm 133, how good and pleasant it is when brothers live together in unity, for there the Lord bestows his blessing. For there, actually, the Lord bestows his blessing. And for a long time, I've been inspired by the Hillsong worship team. And, you know, it's great being in Sydney that we can go over there sometimes and go to some of their services. I love that. But more than their music, actually, what inspires me about them is their commitment to team. And that's something that really comes across from them. And in your notes, I've put a quote, so you don't have to try and take notes or anything. I've written it there for you. But let me just read this to you. This is from Darlene Check, who leads that team. She says, "There is favor granted to those willing to pay the price of unity, hard work, and sacrifice. It is costly. It can reveal all the things you don't love about yourself. It takes such an unnatural measure of selflessness, but the fruit of it is truly a remarkable testimony to the grace and favor of the King. A fully functioning community of believers covers one another. They make up for each other's weaknesses, and they help one another shine." That's pretty cool, isn't it? When we understand God's purpose of working together, then being part of a corporate team of believers and worshipers is a very healthy and powerful place to be. The Hillsong team enjoys great unity. We build each other up when we come together. That's one of the reasons why I think Hillsong music has been allowed to have an impact in such a dramatic way. It's an amazing bunch of ordinary people who continually choose to say yes to whatever need presents itself. Okay? I think that's very inspiring. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Do you agree? Yeah? Good. Okay. That's good. So, I think that needs a lot of thought and prayer. Take that away and just think, how do we build teams that where the heart of it is to build each other up when we come together to help one another shine? And Darlene Check also says this. She says, success in the kingdom is building into the lives of others. Okay, if you really take that on board, that may actually change your life and change your priorities, change your values, all kinds of things. Success in the kingdom is building into the lives of others. And I think the Hillsong team is actually full of people who could be individual artists in their own right, but they've been inspired that by putting their gifts together, it adds up to something greater than they could be alone. Now, the flip side of that is that disunity, it's crippling, it's paralyzing, it's fruitless, it's bitter in flavor, and it's often extremely petty in nature. Unity is fruitful and fun, actually, and we should be people that just have a ball together, who just love living life together, have a lot of fun in what we're doing, in music, in worship together. And something Rob Rufus said yesterday, I think, he said, you know, he was talking to pastors, but he said, people must know our love for them is infectious, you know, that it's our joy to pray for them and stuff like that. Sometimes worship team, especially leading a worship team, it can feel like a bit of a burden, kind of. It can be fraught with challenges. You know, it's not an easy thing to do sometimes. But we want to have fun doing this. We want to have joy doing this. I really got that from Rob Rufus yesterday. And I just want to give you two examples about unity, things that I feel God's been teaching me about this recently. And last year, I went and led worship with another guy called Matt Wido at this event called North 06. Inspiring title. It was a brilliant time. And we just put this band together just for this event, and they were good musicians, for sure, but we're also friends who truly loved each other. Okay, and when we, you know, it was the sort of typical thing, 1 hour rehearsal for the whole event the day before. And but as we started playing, I just thought, wow, this is going to be amazing. And it wasn't, I didn't mean musically amazing, you know, that was probably musically averagely okay. I just thought, wow, this is going to be an amazing time. And I had a sort of picture in my heart, actually, that I could sort of perceive that we were of one heart. And I had this picture of everybody's hearts being wide open and totally unguarded. And the blessing that we enjoyed that weekend in worship was incredible. And let me just read you, because sometimes after the event, you know, you can make these things out to be more than they were. But I'm just going to read you this little bit. I wrote this down in my diary as soon as that weekend finished. Okay, this is what I put. This was an extraordinary weekend. With a band containing some of my dearest friends, I saw that our hearts were wide open to God and we were in complete unity. No one's heart was guarded in any way, and there was no insecurity between any of us. We had some of the most extraordinary times of worship I have ever been in. I felt God reveal to me a lesson about relationships and unity and the tangible power of that, as in Psalm 133. For there the Lord bestows his blessing, the powerful, indefinable, unmistakable otherness of the blessing of God. That's why I felt God really impress it upon me. Because sometimes in worship teams, we can have just little things over our hearts, can't we? Little barriers, little insecurities that people have, little things that people are hiding behind. And I feel God wants us to get beyond that, to really be the body of Christ, joined together, truly loving one another. And I think the language, you know, that Darlene Check uses in that quote, when we come together, we build each other up, we help one another shine. So I've just put here a few points that I hope may help you to move toward achieving that, okay? So first thing, you're probably not going to have a church full of session musicians, But I want to encourage you to look for the strengths in each person. Ask God to give you the eyes to see the strengths in each person. And we're coming to the church in Sydney. It's quite small, but the church is actually full of very gifted people. I can see that. And it's just gifting that needs to be unleashed. You know, it's all there, but it's not fulfilling its potential at the moment. So, and at the moment I'm planning this Christmas thing, you know, in my mind. Still need to chat about that, actually, Pete. But I'm just making mental notes all the time. I see that person could do that, and I could see this, and I can see that, okay? It's exciting. I also want to encourage you that time spent in God's presence together as a worship team will create excitement of what God's doing among you and will bring great team bonding. Okay, so you can talk a lot about team and let's be a team and all that, but actually just getting in God's presence together will do a lot of that for you. And the bottom line really is not great musicianship. We do desire that, of course we do. But if we don't know what the presence of God is like, if we don't know the Holy Spirit, if we don't know how to be in step with Him and be sensitive to Him, if the church is not regularly in the manifest presence of God, then we're missing our reason for being, worship team, okay? And, you know, just to highlight that, I find it so disappointing when I see musicians playing in worship and they're just playing notes and they're kind of disengaged from the worship. I find it so exciting and inspiring when the guitarists and the bass players are singing the words and they're engaged in worship. You know, we want worshipers, don't we? So we need to be doing much more than rehearsing when you come together. Like, we do need that, of course. We need rehearsal time for sure. But we also need to be worshiping, waiting, and growing in the gifts together. And the benefit of bonding that this will bring is incalculable. And it really encourages me, like when Pete's teenage son comes home from worship rehearsal and he goes, "It was awesome," like that. Okay, that tells me that we're on the right track, we're doing something right there. Okay, second thing, be leaders of vision. Okay, so don't plant ideas in people's heads that having vision means that you're going to be making albums every year, okay, or something, if that's a million miles from where you are at. But if you're a small church plant and you're geographically quite isolated, you're still connected to a family of churches around the world, and you can inspire and envision people about that. And there's still prophecies over your region, your town, your church that you need to take hold of and pray into so that everybody in the team can own them. It's no good if just the pastor knows what they are. If you don't know what they are, the prophecies over your church, get hold of your pastor and say, tell me, communicate so I can tell them to the church and we can get hold of them and start praying into them. Okay, just to be people of vision. And I've written here, the most important thing about team is that people embrace the idea of giving themselves to something bigger than themselves, to the extent that they're willing to make personal sacrifices for it, and so that it becomes more important to them than the meeting of their own individual desires and needs, which is actually reflecting what Stuart said to us at the beginning, so that's cool. Next thing, run with what God is doing among you, okay? Don't feel like you have to follow a particular model. For example, Hillsong or HDB or someone, they do their rehearsals like this, so we should do that too, okay? Just pray for strategy and be fluid. You know, if you have regular gatherings, I encourage you to do that if you don't. But, you know, for a season, you may want to do it like this, you know, and then just be fluid with that. Pray for a particular strategy. Don't feel that you have to stay with that thing, but let it be fluid and change. Set a high standard, okay, of ways of doing things. For example, I'm just expecting a few amens when I say this, okay, but scrappy and lengthy sound checks use up valuable time and they can create ongoing niggles in tensions. If people are doing it badly every week, okay, how long does it take to get fed up with that?
Not very long.
Okay, so learn to do it right. Okay, learn to do it right. Say to everybody, this is how we're going to do this. This is how it should be done. And set a standard of how it should be done. And even in the smallest of church settings, do set standards of excellence rather than that will do. And I would say especially do that if you're moving in and out of your venue every week. And, you know, get a an efficient routine together that will help keep morale high, because that it takes a lot of energy. It's quite draining to do that, isn't it? Those of you that are going into the school hall with a whole PA system and all that kind of thing. You know, really think, how can we do that so well and really efficiently so that it's not a hideous burden every week, okay? Right, never avoid confrontation, okay? But always talk things out in love. I've learnt, we have a little son, and I'm getting to learn a few things about parenting. And as you know, if you have children, if you let little things slip, they're always harder to fix later, aren't they? So I'd say in a non-patronising way, I would use the principles of parenting to address things in people. So it's the same with your little kids. You're not constantly, if you know how boring it is to constantly say, don't do that, don't do that, don't do that all day. It's more like, how about doing it this way? You know, like just little things like that. Also, as also with parenting, choose your battles. But and also, I think a team is in some ways built one person at a time. And if we don't win the tricky ones, they can ruin it for everybody. And I saw, you know, I gave you an example of unity about the North thing. I saw the opposite when I went to do a vocal training day at a church once. And as I was picked up from the station, I was greeted with the words, I just want to warn you. And I was thinking, oh, excellent. And basically, there was one controlling person in this church that was holding everybody to ransom, making everything miserable. And this church had a fantastic building, great musicians, all the resources you could ever imagine. And it was the most barren, dry, fruitless place I'd ever been. It made me almost grieve in my heart. You know, I just could not believe it. That is the opposite of unity, okay? That's what you get. No fruit whatsoever. Okay. So be careful not to promote gifted people with the wrong attitude until they have the right attitude. A little bit of time for them waiting and become, you know, they can be part of the team, but perhaps not on the platform just yet. You know, a little bit of time waiting and becoming a team player will be much better for them and for the whole team in the long run, even if you feel you need that gift right now. Okay, so relationships are the most important thing. The unity, the body of Christ, where every part needs each other. That's God's way for us. Have fun and love each other. As Stuart's already alluded to, I just say give time to practical work. Do listen to CD arrangements and try to emulate them. Just think, what actually is the electric guitar doing there? What's the bass doing? When are those harmonies coming in? If you've got them top to bottom through everything, they're not actually going to add something, whereas holding things back till later will add a different dynamic. Okay, start to think about that. Again, Stuart's already said this, but great musicians are great listeners. Okay, develop listening skills in people who listen to each other. So you probably have many talented people among you that are not reaching their full potential because everybody's just playing what they like and they're just doing it the way they always have done. Okay, that's the case in Sydney, actually, at the moment. It's not, I don't say that negatively, but it's just no one's ever given any time to thinking about it, okay? Whereas if you just take a little bit of time and go, why don't you do this, and how about we leave that till later? And suddenly, everybody goes, you know, we did that the other day, and someone said, wow, what happened to the worship today? You know, like that. So, okay, it makes a big, big difference, okay? There has to be time doing that behind the scenes, working out harmonies instead of, you know, everybody making theirs up on the spot and clashing lines and all that kind of thing. And you know, just stuff like that. You've got to give time to it, but it's really worth it. Just two more things. With church plants, when people move to another place, there is a period of unsettlement, as I'm sure many of you know. Everything's different, even just finding the shops, you know, and where everything is different, okay? It takes extra mental and emotional effort, okay? So just be sensitive to new people among you so that they don't feel isolated and so that they don't only see you at church on Sunday or at musicians' meetings, okay? You know, you put yourself in their shoes. And actually, we've not struggled with going from big church to small church, but, you know, we've looked at 200 houses, would you believe that? Finally found one. So all these things take time and effort. And but, you know, we wouldn't be anywhere else because we know that God's called us to go there and be part of a team. And I just want to close with this. When I was in Brighton once, Terry was preaching, and he just said this thing, one sentence at the end of a preach, and I wrote it down. And he said, we do know our life is brief. We don't know how long we've got, but we can play our part in something hugely significant. We can build a house for God. And I took hold of that, and I do believe that it's not hard to inspire people to give themselves to something bigger than themselves. I don't think that's a hard thing to do. And that's the very heart of team. And I just want to encourage you, I recommended that Darlene Check's books were here, actually, in the bookshop, the Extravagant Worshipper and the Kids of Heaven. I think those books help you get the heart of a team builder. So I would recommend them to you. Okay.
Great, thank you, Kate. I think that's really, really helpful. I actually want us to stop just for a moment, because I think quite often we hear things and they are really helpful, but we kind of miss, you know, they pass us by. We kind of make a note of them. So I actually want to stop for a minute, and I'm just going to mention a couple of things that Kate said, and I want us to actually do a kind of a little evaluation process in our own worship team. So you may want to have a piece of paper, and just want us to just spend a moment or two evaluating where we are in terms of our own worship teams. So have a think about this. I'm going to mention a few things. I was just making notes as Kate was speaking, because there was so much that was really, really helpful, both from personal experience, but also in terms of, you know, practically how things work. Just think for a moment. You may want to make a note or just close your eyes and think about this. Where are you at in terms of your friendships within your team? What are the strengths and what are the challenges that you see within your in terms of friendships and relationships? Kate was saying how important that is and how that makes a huge difference to what happens when you're on the public platform. Who particularly needs to be loved in your team? Make a note of a couple of things practically that you could do as a team leader, if you're the team leader, to develop and strengthen those friendships. Okay, something else that Kate mentioned, worshipping together as a team. Where are you at in that? Are you making time to do that? If not, how are you going to structure rehearsals? And I want to do a thing on rehearsals in a minute. How are you going to structure rehearsals to make sure that that isn't the thing that always gets cut? Okay, a third thing that Kate mentioned was vision. Let me ask a question. Let me put it this way. What has God spoken to your local church over the last 12 months, 2 years, prophetically or in terms of a sense of leadership? And how should that affect how you prepare to lead? How does your part in the public aspect of church fit in with what God has spoken to you about? I suppose that's what we're saying. Okay. Hopefully that's helpful. What we want to do here is not just give you nice talks, but actually, you know, we want things to change as a result of what we're talking about here. So I want you to take those things seriously that we that Kate has mentioned there, because there are some profound things that are full of wisdom and are really important for us setting the right course for the next 6 months, year, or whatever in terms of our worship team. So thank you very much, Kate. That's brilliant. Let me just talk about a couple of practical things, and then I'm going to, perhaps if there are any questions that have come out of this, and then I want to close down, finish off on terms of whole things about teams, and actually talk about a particular relationship, which is the relationship between the church leader and the worship leader or team leader, which I think brings its own different elements and dynamics, which is why we've got Pete and Kate. But let me just say a couple of things, a practical thing that Kate mentioned about sound checks. It's something that really is worth thinking about, and I just want to give you a couple of practical things about how we do sound checks, because I think that might be helpful. Sound checks, at their worst, seem to be this kind of melange, is that a word? Of a bit of rehearsing, a bit of, I can't hear myself, turn me up, a bit of... just all sorts of, it's a real mess. Most of the sound checks I've seen are not disciplined. Okay, and let me just give you some practical pointers. I wasn't going to do this, but I think it's kind of helpful in terms of sound checks. What we do is we try and make sure that we separate our rehearsal time from our sound check time. Okay, that really helps the sound guy or girl. Okay, so the first thing is the sound person should be there, I would say, probably 20 minutes to half an hour before the band are actually there in order to be able to set up stuff. Okay, then what we would do is we would have a rehearsal later on, because we do rehearse before the actual thing on the morning. But what we do in terms of sound checks is, practically, what we do is we go through each instrument. We actually let the sound guy lead, sound guy actually lead the sound check time. So what the sound guy is, when we've got everything set up and everything, sound guy goes, okay, let me hear the drums first. So he'll go, give us a kick, if you... mic up your drums. So give me the kick drum first. So the drummer plays the kick drum. At this point, no one else is playing or talking. Okay? It's disciplined. Okay? So he does that while we just sit, and then eventually they do. So the guitarist is not working out something. We're not talking about an arrangement or whatever. He's just doing that. And he goes through the whole kit. Okay? Then we go to the bass. We say, okay, and the sound guy is running this. He goes, okay, let's hear the bass. Because he's getting a sound up front, okay? And then we go through each of the instruments individually, yes? Then what we do is we'll do a little bit of playing all together, okay? So he can hear the overall sound, okay? When we've done that, we then think about what we can hear in our foldback. Now, here's where the discipline comes again, okay? Where we'll go round the... We'll start with the drum kit again. The drum kit will play. And each person in turn will say how much or how little they want in their monitor. Okay? So we do all that to make sure we've got all that. Then we go to the bass. And we go to each person and say, do you want any more bass? Do you want less bass, more bass, whatever, in their monitors? Yes? Then we go through each instrument so that each person is deciding how much or how little they want. Then we play a song, half a song. And then we go, right, does anybody want to change anything? And at that point, we do that. That sounds very simple, but unless you actually adhere to those things and shut up when you're not supposed to be playing, it makes it incredibly difficult. Okay, that is how a proper sound check should happen. Yeah? That's a good question. I think probably what would be worthwhile is him getting all the sounds up and then doing your monitor mix, and then playing everything so that we can then adjust the monitor mix and then adjust the front of house. Because actually it is hard, you're right, playing a song when you can't hear anything. Okay, so yes, that's a good point. Okay, yeah. Sure, okay. So, yeah, so the question was, in what exact order do we do it? We do the sound check and get the sounds up, perhaps, before we do the front of house. Yeah, sorry. Okay, any other question on that while we're... Right, careful. Okay, the question is... okay, let me clarify the question. What do we do if the sound guy isn't gifted in sound? Okay. The question of sound, people. It is a whole other seminar. There is a school of thought. And actually, in years gone by at our church, I remember it basically being, if you can play, you're in the band. If you can't play and you've got no musical ability and you can't find anything else to do, if you're not gifted at stewarding, you could do the sound. It's kind of like, in terms of the priorities of things, it was kind of so low down that it was unbelievable. People need to be gifted in the area of what something sounds like. Okay, it's a major issue. It's a brilliant skill, and it's a thankless task because people only talk to the sound guy when it's wrong. Never talk to him when it's right. Which means that actually you should talk to him when it's right. And that's your responsibility because nobody else is going to think of it. People are just going to moan. Okay, to him. So actually, and I know Kate, you've often said this is really important. He needs to be part of the team. He needs to hear what the band sound like, okay, and be familiar with it and feel part of creating this thing because he has a huge amount of power. He can make you sound rubbish, or he can make you sound good. So he or she. Need to be part of the team, and actually at various points we have brought people in to actually do a bit of training. Okay, so we brought people from the outside, just as we might go to a seminar to learn how to play our guitar better. The PA guy needs to get to a seminar, or actually have people, if you can afford it, to bring someone in to actually help them understand about EQ, understand what the overall sound should be like. And the sound guy should be listening to lots of music. He should be interested in music in order to have an idea of what these instruments should sound like. Okay, so it's a skilled job. It is a really skilled job, and it's not for, it should be for people who have gift and have an ability to hear. Hearing is the most important thing, because you can always learn the technical stuff. And sometimes people are technical, but they actually have no idea what it should sound like. I'd rather go for a person who understands what it should sound like. We're going into very strange areas here. What do you do if the sound guy is partially deaf? Okay. Yes, that's right. Okay, we're talking about healing. We're talking about people. Didn't we talk about, as we play, we expect the healing of God to come? Okay, well, let's expect that. Okay, cool. Let me talk very briefly about the practical side of rehearsals, and then I want to get these guys up to do stuff. So I'm going to fly through this very quickly, because I think I want us to think briefly about rehearsals and how we do them. Setting goals. Okay, it's really important to set goals. I think Kate touched on this. Actually, where do you want to be in a year's time in terms of your worship team? So you set a kind of a long-term goal, but then set short-term goals to be able to achieve that. So long-term and short-term goals. So for example, if you want to develop the area of prophetic singing, okay, and you've always thought, I wish the band or, our singers would be able to sing out more, when we lead worship, set a goal for that. So it may not be a goal that you share with everybody else, but think, in a year's time, I want us to at least once sung out prophetically, one of us to have sung out prophetically. Think, okay, by next Christmas, that's what I want to see happen. If you're going to do that, then you need to set some short-term goals. And what I would then say is, okay, in 2 weeks' time, what we're going to do, actually this week, what we're going to do is we're going to rehearse our songs at our rehearsal for this Sunday and next Sunday. Okay, so we've got them down a little bit. So I'm going to plan ahead so that the next week when we have a rehearsal, we're not just spending all our time preparing for the Sunday. We've already got that sorted. And what we're going to do is we're going to do a bit of practicing prophetic singing. So what we're going to do is we're going to get the keyboard player to play a few chords. I'm going to get each of the singers to get their Bible out, and I'm going to pick a little passage and get them to sing it out. Okay, much better to do this in the setting when there's only six of us than in front of 300 people or 200 people. And actually get them, because actually it's a confidence thing about beginning to learn to do that. Set those short-term goals to actually develop that confidence in order to achieve your long-term goal. So let's not just sit there going, I wish we had this. There are ways that we can set things in place to be able to get there. So that's just an example. Think through, set your long-term goals, and then think about short-term goals that are going to help you achieve that. A few practical tips, okay? You're going to have to scribble these down really quick because I'm going to go real fast. In terms of rehearsals, agree a time to begin. These are things that have come from hard experience down the years, because I've been involved in a number of worship teams in various scenarios down the years. Agree a time to begin. Okay, this is not a time to arrive, this is a time to begin. So the drummer would need to be there a significant time before the others because he takes longer, or she takes longer to set up. Okay, make sure you can hear each other. In rehearsals, it's really important. If we're going to listen to one another, we're going to have to be in a position where we can hear what each other are playing. Okay, so fold back is really important, or monitors are really important to be able to hear one another. And if you can't hear one another because there's not enough monitors, then that's the next thing that you need to put on your list to speak to your pastor about in order to have monitors to be able to hear one another. Really important. And position yourself in positions where you can actually hear one another if there's a shortage in you know, technical equipment. Okay, tune up, really important. Okay, it's nothing worse than hearing an out-of-tune guitar. Okay, take time to do that. You know, I'd start and say, okay, let's all tune up. Don't just kind of fly into it. Be disciplined. Okay, people should not be playing while you're talking, explaining the next song, okay, in your rehearsal, and you're going, okay, we're going to do this, and somebody's fiddling away. It's so irritating. You may need to break things down. In other words, okay, singers, why don't you go into the next room to practice your harmonies, okay, to maximize the time. It can be very deflating in terms of morale if you've got a little brass section or something and you spend 95% of that rehearsal them not playing because you're too busy working out how the kick and the bass should work together, okay? Or the singer's just sitting around. I often would find singers that come up at the end and say, that was really boring because we were sorting out something rhythm section-wise. So sometimes think about ways that you can break things down like that, okay? Hand signals. Sort out your hand signals in your rehearsals so that you know what you're doing when you actually play on Sundays. Perhaps talk about more about hand signals tomorrow. And use the hand signals, yes. Worship leaders, signal to your band, okay? I will talk a bit more about that tomorrow. Notes for leaders, real quick, so I'm going to thrash through this. Set a time to end and stick to it. I think it's a betrayal of trust to force everybody to get there at 7:30, ready to start at 7:30, and you've said you'll finish at 9 and you don't, okay? I think that is a undermines trust. Okay, it's true about preachers as well. Sorry. Okay, be sensitive to people's ability and confidence. Some people actually are not confident about reading music. Some people don't read music at all. Some people are not very confident about chord charts. Be sensitive to what people can do because actually it can really knock someone's confidence if you make an assumption of something that they can't do. So I'm going to race through these. Don't be afraid to delegate. Just because you're the team leader doesn't mean you have to be the best person at writing chord charts, to be the best arranger, as well as to be the pastor and the organizer and stuff. Okay? If there's somebody who's great at arranging, give them the responsibility to actually sort it out. It doesn't mean that you're a rubbish leader. It just means that you're using all the gifts within your team. Okay? So I just want to run through that. I know this is a kind of strange mixture of kind of, you know, inspirational stuff and then practical stuff, but the two need to come together in some way, so there's stuff there. Okay, let's move on to the question I get asked most when I do various conferences and seminars and stuff. The question that seems to come up most is one about the relationship between the church leader and the worship leader. Always seems to be the thing that comes up. And it's such a vital relationship in the church. And it's such a powerful thing when the preaching of the word and great worship times go hand in hand, you know, where there's an understanding and a respect and a kind of working together. When there's not a working together, it can be a painful and difficult really quite demoralizing thing. So what I really want to do is just have a little look at this. And I've asked Pete and Kate both to come up and to just talk briefly about each of them, to talk from their perspective as a pastor and as a worship leader, what they feel is their responsibility to the other and what are their expectations of each other. And then we'll open it up for questions and handle it that way. Is that right? You guys come up. Who wants to start? Okay. So we're talking about responsibilities and expectations, one of the other.
Used to really annoy the people who used to set up all the gear because I'd always rip the mic and down and they'd say, oh, don't do that. So I've learned to do it carefully now. Dave Fallion once said this. He said the relationship, it's in his book Worship Restored actually, which I'm not sure has been reprinted, has it? Probably not. It's an old book, but it's a good one. And he said this, the relationship between church leaders and musicians is vital if a church is going to be effective in worship. And it's absolutely true. And I just want to say from a team perspective, I suppose I view the whole church as a team, really, when you come to worship. I just see if you're in a congregation, we're all together as a big team. And then within that, there's smaller teams. And one of those teams I see is the worship team and the eldership team who are working together to make that worship time extraordinary. I heard a conversation not too long ago, it's sort of a fly in the. I was a fly on the wall in this recent conversation between a worship leader who happened to be a guy and his wife, who'd actually been down in the creche and hadn't been part of the worship time. And after the service, you might identify with some of this. Sheila said to Bruce, "Bruce, how do you feel it went?" And he said, "Sheila, you wouldn't believe it. You know how I spent hours last night worshiping and waiting on God for an introduction and for some songs? Yeah. Well, Dave, our pastor, blew it out the window. Bruce, what do you mean? Well, just as I'm about to start, he rushes up to me and says he'd like to start the meeting and share a testimony of how God broke in on Bethel's life. Well, at first I thought, well, if it builds faith to meet with God, well, that'll be good. So he gets Bethel up. And she shares for 12 minutes about her family and all that God's been doing and about how her son who went off to university now has a Christian friend and how the daughter who's a complete pain, they're my words, not hers, is now free from pain on her left side and how she really knows God's peace as she has had a difficult time in hospital. I mean, it was dreadful, absolutely dreadful. She was taking all my time. It was so frustrating. She eventually finishes and Dave prays a sort of conclusion prayer to be nice. And then just before he hands over to me, he says, well, I just want you to know, everyone, that we had some news and Marjorie died on Wednesday morning. And, well, of course, everyone sighed. Marjorie's 91. And it was nice. And then he prayed again and then said, over to you, Bruce. Well, my first song was, "This is where the party is." So I didn't know what to do. Marjorie's family are in the front row, you know, so my mind went completely blank. So I just started with the only thing I could think of was I'm accepted, I'm forgiven, I'm fathered by the true and living God. So Sheila says, so how did that song go? Bruce says, well, it was fine, except at the end of it, Bill, who loves that song, prayed the whole song back over the congregation for about 5 minutes. All the young people by now were sitting down thoroughly bored and I'd almost lost it. Before I had time to start another song, Jack brought a prophecy which was all over the place and Dave did nothing. Just let it go on and on, just told me start another song. I tell you, Sheila, it was absolutely painful. I feel like giving up. To crown the whole thing off, Dave came up to me after the meeting. Do you know what he said? He said he thought the drums were too loud. And it'd be good to try some new songs like "This Is Where the Party Is." Sheila, if this is where the party is, I need to get a life. Now, I don't know how many of you identify with... Hands up if there's any form of identification with this in the room. Put up your hand. Kate, you're not allowed to put up your hand. Because there's nothing in there. So I've just... I know I'm sort of broadly sort of going away, but it sort of ties in with what you're saying. I'm talking about how can you avoid that, okay? I'm just going to give a few things and then throw over to Kate. I think one key is avoid a them and us mentality, like my time. I mean, I don't know where that, I mean, I can't stand that, you know. I mean, it's God's time. And, you know, I mean, I spoke yesterday, I'm passionate to meet with God. And I don't have that sort of sense, you know, my time, your time. You know, we want to be flexible. And so sometimes I've heard that from worship leaders and sometimes I've heard that from leaders. You know, my time, it's God's time. You know, and so we need to avoid that. Okay, number two, communicate about the meeting and beyond the meeting. Okay, I mean, communicate about what the meeting, what you're going to do in the meeting, who's going to start the meeting. And who's going to lead into it? I mean, we talk about that. It's no good if I've got to start. I can't. That's one thing that really gets to me. When I start the meeting and then the worship leader starts the meeting, you think, how many starts are we going to have this morning? And we talk about that. Sometimes, you know, often I found the elders are best to actually take authority and gather a congregation. And sometimes it's just simply, come on, get together. But then I might say to Kate, Kate might have something on her heart that she's really prepared, like a Bible reading. So I said, well, who's going to really start? Do you want me to pray? Or, you know, I'll often start. But sometimes she'll have something on her. So I'll say, well, you go for it. You know, you lead into that. I'll just gather the people for you. Then I'll hand it to you. And then you start and bring, you know, bring us to God. So you've got, and outside the meeting as well, so important. We've already talked about that. Friendship. It's not just about the meeting. It's about life together in God. Communicate what God's doing in your life, where we're going as a church, etc., etc. Okay? Three, develop a team feel. Friendship, as we've already said, not just, you know, a job. You know, I'm so thrilled that Miles and Kate are with us in Sydney. There weren't too many people that I actually went to and asked, but I went to them. And I said, I need you, and I want you to pray about it and seek God. Because I just know we won't build a big church in Sydney without incredible worship. And I know we won't do that unless we've got anointed leaders. And so, you know, a lot of other folk in the apostolic forum that I meet with, they can't believe that I've got Kate in Sydney. I said, well, she's coming on. She's doing well, you know. We're getting there. It's good. But they're jealous as anything. Praise God. Hallelujah. So, you know, they can't believe it. Well, you know, it's because we've developed a team feel. She knows I'm absolutely for her, 100%. I want her to, you know, continue to grow in what God's given her to do. And I believe, you know, God's given her, you know, a massive anointing, which I'm so glad it's on display this week. And, you know, it's going to be displayed more and more in a big church in Sydney, I believe. Number four, I've said this, make sure you're on the same page. And Kate will probably talk into that. What are your expectations of each other? What are your expectations for the worship time? And, you know, be clear on where authority lies, really. I mean, ultimately, the authority for the church lies with the eldership team. The buck stops, you know, with me. That's the truth. As it stands, I'm the only elder there at the moment, so the buck absolutely does stop with me. And so be clear on that, but also be very releasing. And so it seems like in that situation, Dave took no responsibility for the meeting at all, actually. I mean, didn't bring any correction, didn't, you know, bring any direction at all, didn't try and help. I mean, there's some occasions when it's very hard. I mean, I can remember one occasion, actually, in Brighton, when the morning just got, I mean, I was, you know, Dave Felly and I were very good at trying to, you know, shape and help and release time to worship leaders and not get a line up at the mic and hold people back and, you know, at times. But I remember one Sunday, it was just one of those Sundays that it's like every odd prophetic person in this region turned up to CCK that day. I remember it so clearly. And every time I tried to redirect the meeting, someone else who I'd never seen before in my life brought some prophetic, you know, contribution that was way off the wall. I remember turning to my wife, Susan, I said, maybe I should just go to the mic and say, listen, if you're here and you've never contributed and you want to prophetically, this is your morning to be wacko, okay? So we just released the whole morning to you because we got in control. In the end, I think I just shut the worship down. I thought, that's it. I can't, you know, cope with this anymore. But there must be an element of trust between you. You know, there must be, there must be that trust, and there is. You know, I absolutely, you know, trust Kate and Miles. I trust them because I know that they want to get to God. And I suppose one of the things, one of my expectations of anyone who's involved in worship, if I'm honest, is that they're a worshiper. They're a worshiper. You know, it thrills my heart. I saw you actually, I looked across, it was one of the worship times, and you went on the platform. It just thrills my heart that, you know, Simon was doing so well. I'm so thrilled, you know. I helped to get him to Brighton, and I'm so thrilled that, you know, we weren't just taking Kate, but, you know, helping to add in there as well. He's done so well, I feel, this week, and I've encouraged him, and that's so important. But he was, like, the meeting was, you know, booming, and she's not on the platform, but guess what? She's worshiping, you know, down there as much as anybody. She's not sitting there as a critic saying, oh, he could have done this or he could have done that, or, you know, she is a worshiper. And that's what you want. I mean, I don't want people on a platform if they're not worshipers. I mean, it doesn't correlate with me, you know, that we should put them there and then they're not. So that's a huge expectation I have, and that they're growing in their relationship with God and wanting more of God. So that's just a few things, you know, keys to communication. We don't always get it right. Sometimes I know we've had these signal things, sometimes we've messed up. I know I've messed up, you know, like this is supposed to mean keep going, and Kate thought that meant wind up. I remember, you know, times I'm really meeting with God. I'm going, keep going, God's here. And she goes, stop, because I went like this. Just like, okay, sit down. I think, what's she done? It's my, you know, silly, you know. So it's just having that level of communication and being on, you know, the same page. I want to meet with God in worship times, you know, and I want to be flexible in that. So I am, you know, if the worship time's starting to move, well, we can be flexible in terms of, you know, the preaching. But at the same time, you know, Kate, in fact, I said, look, I just want it to be shorter this morning because I've got something that I know God wants to minister at the end, and we're going to go into that at the end. And this is, you might even have a song in mind as a pass off and do. I say, look, could we do that? Because we really, you know, I believe God's going to do a mighty thing. Kate, over to you.
Cool. I'm going to do this really quick because we're nearly out of time. Okay, so I've got some bullet points here. My responsibilities to the church leader. Be reliable and consistent in gifting, in temperament. Okay, you know what I'm saying there. Have a generally great attitude. I think the most important thing God has taught me in the last 2 years has been all to do with humility. All to do with humility. Okay. Theologically astute, okay, just means know the word of God. Okay, you should be able to spot a dodgy line in a song, that kind of thing. I'd say do things the way your pastor wants them done. If they want the stage cleared 10 minutes before the meeting, if they, you know, just little things like that, ask them, how do you want us to conduct this? You know, they may not want you rehearsing right up to the moment when the meeting starts and all that kind of thing. So just find out. Okay, never serve your own agenda. That's my responsibility. I was trying to think of an example, and I was thinking, okay, maybe I've written a song, and I'm really excited about my new song, and I've got it on my list. And just before I'm going to do my new song, there comes a prophetic contribution that means my new song is no longer appropriate. If I continue with that, my new song, I'm serving my own agenda, okay? Just to give you a wee example. Love the church. You're more than a muso. You want the people of God to meet with God, okay? This is really hugely important. Come full of the Holy Spirit. Now, some of you have got incredibly demanding jobs, lots of kids, or, you know, like just the sort of thing, and maybe you are the person that is leading week in and week out. Okay, so you know what that is. You give out, you give out, you give out, and then suddenly you burn out and fall over. And but I would just say to you, there's not always heaps of time to prepare songs. I mean, even at this conference, the musicians, you know, we go from session to a meal to a rehearsal. You know, like I'm just preparing worship times in my head all the time as I'm walking down the beach, you know, all that kind of stuff. There's not a lot of time. But when I'm in my room, I'm just praying, God, come in the meeting. Anoint me to do this. Help me be in tune with the Spirit. That's how I'm praying. So, and one time I remember I was doing some conference with Terry, and I said to him before the meeting, before it started, I said, Terry, to be honest, I'm not feeling that hugely prepared for this. and he said to me, just smiled at me, and he said, just come full of the Holy Spirit. Okay, so that's what I'm saying to you. If you're giving out every week, you've got to fill up again. So that's probably the most important thing I can say to you today. Also, bring a sensitive and appropriate response to the preaching of the word. When people are preaching, I'm thinking right from the beginning, I'm starting to think of song ideas. I'm just listening out for what's the heart of this message? What is the most appropriate response? Because that can make a big, big difference. Okay, my expectations of the church leader. Now, there's an element of authority. You know, when Terry asked me to lead Stoneleigh for the first time, the first thing I said was, God, give me the authority that I need to do that, because you do need a certain amount of it. But and your pastor's giving you responsibility for an amount of the meeting. But obviously, that authority is always submitted to the church leader. And I say that, you know, I'm saying these things whether you're a guy or a woman leading worship. I just feel it goes with the role rather than gender. So with the leaders, Pete's already kind of covered this, but I expect a leader to be a leader with a capital L, okay? So if there's the first time I led worship, the first time someone got up in the meeting and said, God says you're all, you know, hideous and you're going to hell or something like, truly, that was the first time I ever led worship. There was this prophecy that was so hideous. But I actually felt relaxed, and I just worked because I thought, I'm not dealing with that. That's not my job to deal with that. So it was okay. And actually, Terry got up that day and he, you know, firmly but graciously corrected this person. And he also spoke to them privately afterwards about how, you know, that's not God's heart for people. So, but this provides a beautiful safety net for the worship leader. Okay, it would be totally inappropriate, I feel, for me to correct that person and address that. It would not be appropriate. It's not my job. Okay. The flip side of that was, very quickly, I was leading at an event once at a different stream, and there was two guys overseeing the meeting, and halfway through this ministry time, they were coming up to me going, what do you think we should do now? You know, like that. And I was a little freaked out by that, actually, because I'd never been in that setting. I realized how secure I was with our elders, and I also felt, I was shocked and disappointed that I felt they were abdicating their responsibilities. And I could handle that. I feel I do know where the meeting's going and all that kind of thing. But it was very disappointing to me to see leaders not actually acting like leaders, okay? So, as Pete's already said, I do, in a way, if I can say this humbly, I do expect him to trust me to function in gifting. But that is earned over time, I guess. It's earned over time. And yeah, so we have that earned over years of relationship. He's already. I expect the church leader to be a worshiper. Okay? Sometimes, I know this is part of the elders' thing, but sometimes you see elders and they're just doing this the whole time, looking around, what's going on, is everybody into it? And I don't like that. So I know sometimes you've got to do that, and I know also when people think, oh, I've got this prophetic thing, and they're coming to the elders and they've got to listen to that, and it's a difficult thing to do that. But I do expect the leaders to be a worshiper, to love the presence of God, and I expect them to place a high value on worship. And I think what leaders expect of us, I think, you know, what they appreciate is servants, friends, people with like minds. You know, nobody serves more than a good elder. You know, nobody really appreciates the sacrifices that they and their families continually make. Okay? And when we went to Sydney, what we felt God put on our heart to say was, we give ourselves to serving the work God has called you to do. That was like the specific thing that we felt we were to say. So it means a lot for your leaders for you to say, we're with you. We're with you, okay? Blah, blah, blah. I think, I'm not sure whether this goes under responsibilities or expectations, but I think both worship leader and church leader must have a commitment to the next generation. Okay, I see my son is 3 years old, and some of the things that he loves to worship, I could tell you just amazing stories. And it's my responsibility as a parent to nurture that gifting in him. And when I see that, I see he's got a heart for worship. And I see that now. That would never be as a parent, that would never be a burden for me to do that, would it? It would never be a burden to or a chore or something for me to want to see him come into everything that God could have for him. And similarly with our young people, I think our kids are so receptive to God, to the Holy Spirit. So, and our young people, you know, Simon Brading started leading worship when he was 11, you know, in youth meetings and stuff like that. I think there's no limit for our kids today. There's no, Simon Brading's got the same amount of worship leading experience as I have, 10 years, okay? And he's half my age. It's not fair, is it? But, yeah, so there's no limit. I know, I'll get over it. But there's no limit for our kids, okay? I love him, he's brilliant. But there's no limit for our kids, that's what I want to say. And, interestingly, I was talking to Simon about this over dinner yesterday because I wanted to check I had my facts right and stuff. But and he said something very interesting to me. He said other people have encouraged him to look out for other young guys and, you know, or girls, you know, worship leaders who's blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, he's looking out for the ones that God's got the hand on. But he said, when I started leading worship, I just knew how to play a few songs and I didn't really have any concept of what order songs should go in. And he wouldn't say that when he was 11, he was this awesome worshiper. Do you know what I mean? And I would say myself, I sang in worship for 5 or 6 years before the lights went on and I twigged what worship, you know, I really got it in my heart. Okay, so it's not necessarily, you don't have to feel like we've got to look for the chosen one like David. I think let's just, if they're interested, let's just get them into the team and get the heart, get people, because then you know you might have loads of them coming through, okay? Just a couple more tiny things. The songs we sing, I don't think it's an unreasonable expectation of your church leader for you to run new songs by them to say, I'd like to introduce this song, is that okay? Because as you know, the songs that we sing shape the theology of the church, okay? I also want to say, very in passing, I don't know if you've noticed over this conference, which by the way seems to be all about the glory of God, I don't know if you've noticed, but all the content of the songs is increasingly you, okay? Have you noticed that? Cool. Okay, take that one home, think about it. Okay, I also expect constructive criticism. I don't want either it was fantastic or silence, okay? Because silence says to me, you failed. Even if that's not what they're saying, that's how I'm going to take it. So now sometimes it's not all down to you, worship leaders. Don't panic. Sometimes the people are not up for it. They just don't seem to be alive, you know, something. But, you know, that again, you know, that's down to, well, perhaps we need more teaching from the pastors about what it is to be a worshiper, what it is to give yourself in worship. But sometimes there will be things, you know, that the pastor might say to you, actually, that gap was too long. You know, you just, what were you waiting for there? I don't know. And or you don't talk too much. I think Dave Felly has over the years said to all of us worship leaders, don't talk too much. And I think if you notice that, you know, there's probably only one place in each worship time where us worship leaders will actually say something. So that can be a big one. So receive those things, okay? And the last thing I'm going to say, without overstating it, what I'm expecting in my heart is actually in Sydney is a move of God. That's what I'm expecting in my heart. And, you know, there's heaps of practical things, you know, that we can do with the team. But what I'm feeling at why we're there is to prepare the worship team for a move of God. So it's more about, yeah, yes, we do. This is, you know, we want to make a lovely sound on Sunday and blah, blah, blah. But it's going to be more about teaching about servanthood and sacrifice and the presence of God and the glory of God and all that kind of thing. Okay, so it's a big picture, putting a big picture in people's hearts. That's my expectation. But you've got to make sure that vision, if you've got something in your heart, is in line with your pastor's vision. And I can't imagine, obviously, that that's not going to be in line. But say your vision would be, my heart is to see, you know, make us the greatest selling albums worship team or something in the whole world or something, that may be totally not where your pastor's at, okay? So, but I'm just saying, be, you know, what's in the bottom of your heart, but make sure that is the same, you're sharing the same thing and that you're all building the same thing together. Like when we get back, someone new's just taken over the kids work, so we'll get together and we'll talk about that. How do we all work together so that we're all on the same page? I think that's it.
Great, that's so helpful. The tape will stop now, I think.